cloud.
You know, they send me a thing every week saying, like, you've exceeded your cloud limit. And, like,
no.
I do. And they're like, they don't delete anything. I'm just like, well, but I will keep doing that until you say something. Because I forget to delete. Okay, so let me do, this will be the first one I'm trying to put on the air, too. Or the tubes. But, so I'll do an intro. I'll do the intro that I do on the podcast. I'm trying to save myself time and not edit it later. And then I will get it going. Okay.
Okay.
Today on You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein, we are discussing Pearl. Hello, everybody, and welcome to You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein. I am your host, Silas Lindenstein. Today is a discussion episode. You may have heard the last review, episode number 4. That was a review of the new horror film, Pearl. This is the discussion episode about the same film, but a discussion. And, you know, in this new show, You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein, it's great when I actually get someone to actually watch a movie with Silas Lindenstein. And I did that for this one. My good friend, Casey Rahm, was my guest to the press screening of Pearl. And she's a big horror fan. She is, you're an all-around movie fan, right, Casey?
Yeah. Horror is just kind of my specialty.
Special, Zuma. Like, if you have a choice between two, is that you lean toward the horror? Is that what it is?
Yeah, because I think with the subcategories of, like, horror comedy or B-horror, I can always kind of find whatever I'm in the mood for.
Okay. It's, yeah. So Casey came with me to the press screening of Pearl. You also came to me to see Pearl is the prequel to the movie X, which came out this year as well. You came with me to that, right?
I bullied you into taking me.
I like people know that know me either. Know I've kind of got this weird relationship with horror that I'm like, I'm not a big horror fan, yet I somehow end up at horrors all the time watching them now. Like, or I am a big Walking Dead fan. Like, I like scaring myself. I do like trying it, but I get freaked out after it. Sometimes I can't handle it. But there's so many horror films and there's so many different ways of doing horror that I'm trying to find what is it that maybe there is something I like. And I think Pearl is part of this journey I'm having, like this character of Pearl and this X world for me. So roughly, Pearl is, let me just give the lowdown in case you didn't listen to the review episode. Pearl, it's a 2022 film, rated R, horror slasher, 1 hour, 42 minutes, written by Ty West and Mia Goth. I'm not positive that's the same as X. I don't know that she wrote X.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think that Pearl might have been like born of X kind of in the moment.
Yeah. So X was about a porn film, being an adult film, being shot at this ranch. It took place, like, I think in the 70s, early 80s. And it took place at this farm that was owned by the woman that we met eventually, and it was Pearl, an old woman, and her husband. And for different reasons, she starts killing the people that are making the film. So Pearl ends up this surprise. This old lady is creepy and weird and just killing people. She ends up this surprising villain, maybe the villain of the year, who knows? And they end up writing a prequel about her. And what I think is weird, amazing to me, is that it's hard enough to get one film greenlit, that they were able to get the prequel greenlit before they even finished.
Yeah, I think they shot them concurrently. And so it was, as soon as they wrapped on X, they started shooting Pearl. And so, yeah, I don't know if that was always the plan, or maybe they had some budget left over and they were like, we're just going to try it. Like, I have no idea.
That's crazy to me, because I only hear about that for like things like Back to the Future or Lord of the Rings, like, right?
Not book like properties. Yeah.
Yeah. That they know they're going to do well, probably. Not and this random these, horror film.
Yeah. Neither of these movies, X or Pearl, come off as particularly low budget or anything like that. They're you know, self-contained, they're shot mostly in one place, but they don't look cheap.
Right. No. In fact, I think the sequel, almost like they threw more money at it. Like, it starts off so vibrant and colorful. Mm-hmm. I kept saying, like, it felt like it was this homage to early cinema, like the first color films, like how much color can we just put out there, and making it so beautiful and graceful, which for me was building up the tension of like, okay, I know she's crazy and she's going to start killing people. When is she going to start doing this? When's the crazy come out? And so what I was wondering was, is this only scary for people who've seen X? Is that early part, like,
is
she creepy enough alone? Or like, I don't, I was just really like, this got to be a weird experience if you don't, are you wondering, like, does it take forever for something to happen if you don't know the monster she's to become?
I don't think that this movie, you know, it's not necessarily that you would have to see X in order to understand or even enjoy Pearl, but I do think you're going to get a lot more out of it if you have seen X, because that slow burn is going to be more effective because you know what she turns into. And there's kind of some little Easter eggs throughout, like the car, to kind of give you an indication of when things are about to happen.
Yeah. Oh, those were great. And I was like, man, I wish I had watched X again right before I watched
this. I had the same thought.
Is that the car that's going to go in the lake, that they find in the lake? What? Wait, hold on. Wait, what's going on? Yeah. Let's hit some of the highlights of the, and Ty West was the director of it, by the way, too. So, for me, one of the highlights of is probably one of the longest monologues in recent cinema, I gotta think, especially for something that was written as a movie. Usually when I see monologues, it's because, well, it used to be a play. And that monologue just sits there. And if you haven't figured out by now, folks, by the way, I forgot to say early on, discussion episodes are the spoiler episodes. We're spoiling the film in the discussion episodes. Okay. So I'll have to throw on an extra little
disclaimer plug at the beginning.
Warning. We are about to spoil this movie. Okay.
Yes.
At the end there, when she starts talking about her feelings and everything like that's underneath, I think it's an incredibly powerful monologue. It's amazingly long. Yeah, as I was saying, like, I think only adapted stuff usually have I seen monologues that long. And I thought amazingly brave that it was nearly one shot.
There's one brief moment kind of early in the monologue. Like, let's say it's a 10-minute monologue, maybe like 3 minutes in, it flashes to the person she's talking to for a brief moment.
Yeah.
But that's not even when she's really leaned into the content of the monologue yet. And once she gets there, you don't see the reaction of the other person. You just see, it just gets tighter and tighter and tighter on her face. And you just see Pearl and like what she's really going through.
Yeah.
Super effective.
But an amazing, like, usually they try to, when there's a monologue, they're trying to get different camera angles and move them around to try to make this interesting and feel less like a play. One never felt like a play to me, but this is a really good monologue. Like, wow. And she's crazy. Like, I keep saying it's about their descent. For me, her descent into madness.
Yeah.
And which clearly starts before this. Her start is before the screen picks up, right?
Yeah, she alludes to, you know, some things that she got up to when she was younger. Her mom alludes to things that she knows she's doing that she thinks other people don't see. And so you have a feeling that this has been going on for a while, but that this is the first time where she, turns.
Hold on. My card filled.
Oh, no. Hold on.
Got to figure this out a second. Hold on. Wait. I did not look. See, I had a problem that my card that I was using was in my computer. I'm glad I looked down. What do you mean, no SD card? I just put one in.
Yeah. It's not reading it.
You know what? Because last night, the SD card that I've been going back and forth with a bunch, I did not, like, my laptop fell and it snapped the card in half. What is this? September 13th? Not right now.
Collar off so it doesn't jingle.
Trying to figure out what. And of course, I didn't hit. Wait. Oh no, I'm recording the audio on here. Got to go, baby. Okay, so I don't want to believe that completely. Okay, I do realize we are recording the Zoom.
Okay.
As my backup. So that will just become the main part up until here. So then I switch back over. Okay, sorry. We were just saying.
I think we were saying about when she, you know, when did this start? And there's a couple allusions in the movie from her mother and from her monologue that this has been going on for a while, but it has only escalated since her husband went to war.
Yeah. And which would drive people crazy in good time, right? I get that. So I did want to talk. So it was wartime, but for me, there was a bigger point of the Spanish flu of making that part of it. Do you think they made that as part of it for us to relate to them more?
I think it was definitely supposed to be a play on the fact that they shot these movies during, you know, the height of COVID, small cast, you know, one or two locations. I think that it was definitely meant to be relatable that they're wearing masks to go see something in the theater the way we probably are.
Right. Well, it's just, I was just like, wow, that's, it's like, wow, you're kind of reminding us you're not, most movies are like pretending COVID didn't exist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or reference it. Oh yeah, back then. So this was almost like we know what you're doing right now. You're in COVID. So are we. And this is what happens. You sit at home, afraid of other people.
Mm-hmm.
This fear. Yes, that's something I wrote in my review. Something about everyone's afraid of the virus. People are afraid of the Spanish flu. But the thing that they really need to be fear of is something they're not expecting. That's Pearl.
Yeah.
And I felt like her mom's all worried about the flu's going to kill them, not about her daughter. Like, did you like it? Were you?
Yeah, I did like it. I think I still liked X a little more. And I think that I'm excited to see how this trilogy continues, because I think that overall I found Maxine, the lead from X, to be a little more compelling. But I did like Pearl as a lead, and I think that probably what we're going to get from the third one is that they're more alike than we think. And so that's sort of what I'm looking
Maxine was the character that Mia.
Same character. Yeah, the character Mia Goth played in X. And I think that, yeah, we're going to learn, because obviously they look alike.
Well,
but then also,
now we connected, they connected the adult film thing. And when the old lady Pearl was peeping on them making their movie was like when she was watching that stag film.
Yeah. And right. I think that, you know, there's the themes of this, like, kind of sexual repression, which we do see in Pearl, even though it's much older. She cheats on her husband. She like play acts with the scarecrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's definitely feeling repressed with her husband being at war. And clearly that pattern, that like insatiable nature that she has, continued into her old age. And so I think that's really interesting.
Well, because I thought X made it seem like that she was like really a lesbian, but.
Oh.
Because she got in bed with her, right? With Maxine. Was it Maxine?
I thought she was more like coveting the fact.
Didn't she?
I thought she was more coveting the fact that Maxine like had the body that she didn't have anymore.
Okay.
But I can see that interpretation as well. And maybe that she's might... just because she's so, you know.
Or Silas is a pervert.
No, I could see it. I could see that, like, she has a lust for both sex and like blood and killing and, you know, the power, basically. And you can have that power over men or women.
Yeah. I think what got me to like, and I did like it. I put a like it on it. I loved Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. That I did love that. But there's not a lot of horrors to get me. I think what it is for me is like, I think early on in my life, I saw a lot of horrors that to me did not have a good story, that the story wasn't overwhelming. And for me, it's always story over everything. That's what I care about. And I know there's definitely film critics that wouldn't agree with that. But I really feel like both films, there was this heavy emphasis on the story being there, and that the gore somewhat, I mean, I think horror is almost always gratuitous in some ways, but it feels like they feel at least justified. It's more that they're not shying away from it. They're not turning the camera so you don't see it. You have to see what happened. But
the gore in this one in particular felt like the purpose that it served for me was to show just how far Pearl had gotten. Like, she talks about how she used to only hurt animals in her monologue, you know, and then it escalates to people, but it's not just that she's killing them. It's like these brutal, like burning her mother and then just throwing her down the stairs of the cellar to let her die, or, you know, chopping up her sister-in-law after axe murdering her. Like, she's so far gone that she can't even really notice in the moment that what she's doing is messed up.
Yeah.
It feels justified and it feels, you know, worthy.
Mm-hmm. She, like, I think that what scares me, I think something terrifying about it is almost, is the, how innocent she seemed.
Mm-hmm.
like that she just wants to be in a musical, that's all she wants, really, like she just wants to get away from town. Like, it, I was thinking about that if I hadn't seen the first one, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
how she would come across with all these things, like just this wide-eyed, and maybe, you know, to the other characters in there, there's not like this, her mother wasn't worried about her. Well, her mother does say something about, I see what you're doing, but I assumed it was like the dancing. And maybe, like,
she's saying
Scarecrow wasn't the first thing I'm sure she humped, right? She probably rubbing up against other things or something.
I think that her mom was more saying, like, you're going to lose what you have. Like, your husband's going to find out, his family's going to find out. The more you spend time with these people or try to put yourself out there into the world, the more people are going to find out that there's something wrong with you. And so I don't think her mother ever thought she would take it as far as, you know, killing her. Like, I think her mother thought she had the power in that relationship.
Like, you know, usually, like, films, like, the person gives some, well, they gave us the clue of the animals, I guess, but.
Yeah. She kills the goose and feeds it to the alligator.
Yeah. Which seemed a little, that's wacky. But it wasn't like she was like, you know, like, I was thinking though, like back then, 1918, people might look at them and be like, what would you do that for? But I'm not sure, they at the time didn't connect yet that we know now, if you see somebody like burning like a cockroach or something with a magnet,
a sign.
Yeah, there's a sign that there's something maybe wrong with them, that's not a everybody thing.
Yeah.
Or herding animals is a sign. They're like, well, they're on a farm. People think.
Yeah, I don't think people would know that. And plus the goose, it seemed like, was kind of a pest. It wasn't supposed to be in the barn. Maybe it's eating the other animals' feed. You know, there might be a justifiable reason as to why she would kill it.
And so just this out of nowhere, just get, well, I mean, it was kind of accidental with her mom and that.
Yeah,
it wasn't,
but then it just escalated. Well, and it's
contemplation,
like,
with the dad and
and the dad gets kind of a more peaceful maybe death. You kind of feel like she actually does have affection for her father in that moment, because she's not burning him or chopping him up, she's smothering him with a pillow.
She's definitely considering feeding him into an alligator, but
yeah, that's true, but she she didn't.
Yeah, she didn't. She may, yeah.
I kind of got the feeling that, you know, she didn't realize that killing people was an option until she did it by accident. And then she realized that it would solve a lot of her problems.
Yeah. It's I was trying to think, like, the Joker was definitely a good, that mm-hmm. was a good descent into madness. And this is just another one. But I think it's probably one of my favorite descents into madness because it is so slow. And, well, and I don't want this to sound.
She's so, you know, you do root for her in the beginning because her mother comes off as terrible. You know, her father is an invalid and her husband's at war and she feels alone. Like, I wouldn't want to live that existence either, yeah. You know?
Like, I felt like they made it make sense a little. Mm-hmm. Like, you could see where each step went with her. Even though you're like, oh, well, I wouldn't do that because I'm a good person. But you're like, well, okay, yeah. So I thought that was, and that's also creepy that they mm-hmm. lay out a plan and it's not just, I think that's scarier to me than
yeah.
the sinister boy who just, something's wrong with him. They just likes to kill people where they hit their head. They just don't see right from wrong, but we're like, she's seriously been figuring this out. She's been mm-hmm. thinking about it. As they reveal, and then just gets brutal.
Oh yeah, I am really curious. I have a question for you because I don't yeah. think we talked about this when we left the theater. We really focused on the monologue. When she is about to do her dance audition, did you think she was going to be really good?
No, I thought she had to be bad.
Yeah.
Well, was she even bad?
She wasn't bad, but it was very like that smile that she plasters on a few times throughout the movie is on her face the whole time. And it's so like jarring and unsettling that even if her movements were perfect, I could see why they were like, that is not the look we're going for.
Yeah.
She looks almost deranged in that moment.
Yeah. Oh. I will say that's probably the one part about it that I was like, I didn't like that part of it because I absolutely knew that she wasn't going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, she can't get it because then she ends up on the farm, right? So yeah. That was the one time that I was like, well, I know this isn't going to happen. So that was my one... The one part there, I wasn't ever for worried that she was going to get it or wonder if she was going to get it. Mm-hmm. I did wonder about her friend getting it or her whatever. Yeah, her sister-in-law. Is she going to get it? Oh, that's going to
hurt. Yeah. Younger and blonder.
And you know, she didn't, right?
I think she did. I think she just didn't want to tell her because she just gave her a monologue about how she murders people. And so she told her, like, no, I didn't get it. And then eventually she says, like, yeah, thank you. Like,
thank you. I was trying to wonder if she just, I was trying to figure out if she just agreed with her in order to, yeah, okay, you're crazy. Like, yeah. It's like, you're crazy. Okay, I'm just going to say yes and hope this gets me out of here. Because
I think we're supposed to believe that she did get it because she's younger and blonde. And they said that's what they were looking for. And yeah. So to have her go right after that, I think she did get everything.
She gets everything.
She gets everything she wants.
Oh my God. But we've all had...
That facial shift was just so good. Like that was...
Yeah.
Mia Goth is amazing. Like I want to see her in so many more things.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't realize she had been... How much she had been in before this. And...
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I have to go back and check things out, I guess, if I have time with all these yeah. movies to discuss. Where, I mean, do you hope that the Do you think the next one's going to be in the middle?
I don't know. I think the trailer made it feel pretty 80s. And so
Wait, did you see it?
It's like a teaser. It's just a teaser. So it just is like the Hollywood sign, but the Hollywood sign says Maxine instead of Hollywood. Okay. And it's, but like the color, like the colorization of it and the music that's playing feels very 80s. So I wonder if it's like after she escapes the farm. And she goes and tries to like make it in Hollywood for real. Because I think the difference is they tell Pearl, you don't have the X factor. And Pearl tells Maxine in X that she does have the X factor. And so she's going to be maybe successful.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be cool. Okay, I like that. I was thinking, I was like, well, it's going to be on the farm. So they're going to, would it have to be the middle of this?
I don't think it is on the farm. I think
which would be good. I do think it's a little tired. It could get tiring. Like, okay, what else are you going to do on here?
Yeah.
Another. That would be interesting. How we can.
Yeah.
But boy, I would. If you told me 5 years ago, I would be enthralled with the with a horror trilogy. They suck. I will say, I think they did sucker me in with the adult film in the first one. That I was like, well, that's interesting. What?
It's a really good use of like setting, and I think like the fact that they filmed these two back to back and that you can clearly tell it's the same barn and the same farm and the same river with the same alligator, like I think that there's something about that setting that was really effective in both movies, and the era of both movies, they're different eras, but they just, it's so built into the quality of the film that it gets you like in the right headspace. And then the horror elements in both movies, they come in pretty late. Like the beginning of, I don't think anything, you know, super murderous happened besides the goose until probably 40 or 45 minutes into the movie.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was like, what's gonna happen?
And even in X, you know, it's a slow build. You start to see that the woman is kind of a voyeur and she's watching them, but no one gets murdered until, you know, halfway through the runtime.
What do you think the lesson of the film is?
Oh, that's a good one. So I think an interesting theme that comes up in both of the movies so far is this like idea of being special and being like meant for more. And I think with Pearl, where she got tripped up is that she wasn't actually special. And so I think that the theme or the lesson for this particular movie would be, you know, something like, don't have your head in the clouds, like think about the things that you actually have, because towards the end she even starts to really seem like, damn, my mom was really just trying to help me, like she got us out of a bad situation, she found us a place to live, I found a rich husband, like she tried to give me something more and I didn't see it. And she says in her monologue, like, if he comes back, I'll live this life on the farm with him. I'll be happy. And so I think, you know, she learns the lesson that she needs to make the best of what she has.
I wrote because, okay, so the reason I ask people now the lessons is because there's a movie reviewer called, that website is Every Movie Has a Lesson. So
nice.
I always try to think about like, what are the lessons from this? My first was, I had two that I came up with. And one was support your children's dream.
That's a good one.
You know, it's kind of on the humorous side, but like, I was like, how much of this would have been avoided if she had just been a supportive mother of her child's dream? Go, you know what? Yeah, let me take you down there. I mean, I guess it's a different time, but it's just so weird to me because it still happens that people shit on their children's hobbies. So that thinking that they'll, no, it's not realistic. And then I, well, at the same time, go down to a sports field, and there's a lot of delusional parents thinking they have the next, you know, Pele on her hands.
Oh gosh.
Right. It's amazing. The other one I said was, okay, we didn't get into this, but I think it's a reason for me. I don't know if this is intentional by the playwright or screenwriter. I put everyone is wearing masks, so be careful. And this
that's a good one.
Because this was my thought on, yeah, I don't know, because I, as a director, I know people read into things that I did not mean to happen.
Yeah.
And but she put on this mask for to protect herself. And I think she was also wearing a mask in life in mm-hmm. front of people all the time. The mask, she was, the what was underneath the mask was this monster. And everyone wears a mask. You know, she does, and then we're all wearing mm-hmm. ones too. So I thought there was, you know, I was like, oh, maybe there's something to the masks as an analogy, and that's why they wanted it in this setting, because
I think that's really fitting too, because it's not just her, right? Like the film projectionist is wearing a mask. His tone completely changes once he visits her at the farm and like realizes that there's something messed up going on there. Like his whole tone changes, the way he treats her changes, and ultimately she sniffs it out, and that's why he doesn't get out of there alive.
Well, and then, I mean, he's also like, oh, just come, I'll show you a movie anytime.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I'm a bohemian, a free thinker. You're, oh, luck to this little film. And I was like, oh, this seems like, this is like what happened when people first discovered the internet and they're trying to get people over, like, hey, look what I
Well, and then he wasn't really a free thinker, because he like judged her immediately, even before he had all the facts. You know, he saw the farm and he was like, this isn't for me. And I think the sister-in-law wears a mask as well. You know, she acts like she's trying to be a good friend to Pearl, but I don't think she is being a good friend to her. I think she's using her in a lot of ways as well. And so, and it's like you said, everyone has a mask. We have kind of a clear villain in this movie, but you can also see why Pearl is feeling let down by everyone around her.
Yeah. Yeah. She's oddly sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, oh, it's so scary. It's not like, it's like, you know, you can just write off a Freddy Krueger or a Jason, right?
Exactly.
You can be like, oh no, you're just a monster, destroy it. But this is like, she was shaped by events and bad thoughts. And like, I don't know, where do you intervene in her life? Would she not have become the killer if you simply had supported her dream and been like, hey, you want to get out of here? Yeah, I'll help you. Or was the escape more because she just hated her life so much? And so she didn't, is that even her dream?
I don't know. I think that she did want to leave the farm, and she married, you know, the rich husband, and then he went to war, and he liked the farm and he wanted to stay there. And so I think she would have eventually snapped regardless, because even if he had never gone to war, he didn't seem like he wanted to use his privilege to take her where she wanted to go.
Oh man, the husband didn't even matter, did he?
Barely.
She just wanted out.
Yeah, I think that until the end, I don't think that there was much of a actual loving relationship there, but I do think in that monologue she kind of deluded herself into believing that this would be enough for her, because we know that they're together in the events of X, and that they live on the farm together, you know. And so probably when he gets back, I'm assuming that he either is also messed up, maybe he's got some PTSD and he's just like, yeah, whatever, killing people, fine, I don't know. But you you know that they somehow end up together. And so he either forgives her or joins her or whatever. But
he'd only have to forgive her about his sister, though. Right? Because yeah. The other one's not his fan. But I mean, okay, he walks into this grotesque scene, right?
Yeah. The clearly, corpses are at the table. Everything's moldy. She looks messed up.
So he sees her, and it could very much be, you're insane. My wife is insane. I have to help her. I have to protect her. Particularly in that era, knowing nothing about mental health and stuff, and the shame around it, I could very much see that he got there and was like, okay, we have to hide all this. Mm-hmm. And I got to protect you. My wife is very delicate. I need to put her away and keep her calm. Like,
okay. Well, and he says that in X when they first show up to the barn. See, now I want to rewatch it.
Yeah.
When they first show up to the barn, he says something like, my wife isn't well. Like, please don't come into the house. Don't bother her. Don't distract her. You know?
So that's why initially I thought that maybe the next movie was like a bridge between the two, because maybe like we would come in later and see like, this is what happens, you know, my wife isn't well, people come in, she tries to bang them and then kills them. That's just what she does. You guys, people need to accept this. I love my wife.
Yeah, he's getting like bait for her essentially by marketing the barn.
Yeah. Ooh.
Interesting.
Oh, gosh.
There's a lot of things it could be, and I did, you know, I would have liked maybe an epilogue. Like, we did wait through the credits to see if there was a post-credit scene, because that's what you do now. And I would have liked maybe an epilogue of something between Pearl and X of their life together. Like, what is their arrangement? What is their, or did she go dormant for many, many years because she wasn't faced with, you know, this image of a woman who has everything she wants?
Oh, that's a good question. Is she, in my heart, the way she goes for stuff, I don't believe the people in X were the next people she killed.
Yeah.
I gotta believe there were others that have shown up. She's got an appetite for something, for loving.
Yeah, or murder, or both.
Murder, yeah. Crazy. Okay, I mean, we've had a good share of time here talking about this. Casey, is your podcast still active?
Yeah.
Active. What's the name of it again?
24 Flames Per Second.
24 Flames Per Second. Available on all platforms, I presume. Casey, where they defend and put on trial.
Yeah. So the first couple seasons are, like any given movie, you'll have two roasters and a defender talking about the ups and downs of that movie. I recommend, if you're just getting started, pick one movie you love and one movie you hate and listen to those episodes to kind of get the format. Our current season, we're doing what we call the flame off format. So it'll be just two people arguing, like, biggest Oscar snub or best heist movie, and then I am the judge and I get to decide who gave the better argument.
I like that. I need to see people can check out, actually, I just did a interview with a heist film over on Black and a Half. People can go there. It's a South African heist comedy, which you don't see a lot of.
Nice.
Like, you know, heist comedies from South Africa. So people can check out, I interviewed the cast of that. It's called The Umbrella Men. It's playing at the Toronto International Film Festival. It premiered there. Hopefully it's going to get picked up and gone everywhere else. So
yeah,
people can check out both of those podcasts. But thank you, Casey, for coming.
Yeah.
And watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein.
Always happy to, especially if you need, you know, someone to scream with at a horror movie.
Somebody to hold. I'm scared. Someone to block me. I need a 3D movie. I'll be ducking behind you.
I have my emotional support chihuahua here.
It's the worst part of a movie theater screening without people there. I can't kind of duck behind people. I'd have to definitely put up my hands and block my eye. Like, oh no, I can't.
Just see I slowly start slinking like lower and lower and lower in the chair until I'm like just my back is on like the back of the seat.
But yeah. Thank you for watching, and thank you, listener, for listening to You're Watching a Movie with Silas and Midstein. Turn that off, and I'll turn this off.